Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, we're going to look in depth at the relationship of statins. The new research is claiming that it's one of the greatest medical frauds in history, that we've been oversold on its benefits, and we have been understanding its limitations and side effects. And yet millions of Americans and tens of millions of people worldwide are using it. We'll go into that in depth. Also today, from our environmental segment, we're going to look at the idea that the government should be involved with private corporations to create new forms of engineering to cure the global warming. We believe that this will turn into not blue skies, but white skies. Why? I'll go into depth about the aerosol spray into the upper atmosphere that could reflect light away from the Earth, and scattering of red particles around the Earth could wash the sky white. It could have some devastating effects. Also today, I've been mentioning for some time why I believe that there are 16 states that you should think twice before moving to. Visiting, fine. Vacationing, excellent. But living there, they're simply not sustainable. Now, go back a year ago when I gave my list of the worst seven states in the United States as far as environmental impact. Oklahoma and Colorado were number one and two. We saw what happened in Colorado. Interesting, because when I was on PBS just 3 months ago on television live explaining why I believed that there were some very serious environmental concerns and they should prepare for them, including fires and flooding, I was not given a very warm reception by the people who lived in the area. In fact, when I was out of the studio, some of the people who had been volunteering said, "Hey man, you know, that might be true for New York where you got hit with Sandy, but we've got Aspen, we've got Vail, we've got all these organic farms, we have these beautiful mountain areas, we're safe." 3 days later, the worst fires in Colorado history. 2 months later, the worst flooding in Colorado history. The impact is still being felt. Still a lot of people unaccounted for. So, unfortunately, and it really is a tragedy, people get lulled into some false sense of security. I'll talk about the new Western travesty. Beetles, Drought, Wildfires, and Climate Change by Joshua Frank from Counterpunch. Remember, we broadcast more programs and issues involving the environment than any other program in the world. We'll also have some in-depth follow-up commentaries to my program last evening. If you did not have a chance to hear part 10 of my ongoing series on fascism and who controls the world, go to the archives and listen. It is a real primer, very scholarly. It tells you who's behind the scenes with everything. Who causes the wars? How do they profit from it? Well, I'm going to continue that today with two shorter commentaries. And the first one will be the lesson plan for raising up compliant, non-thinking citizens, John Whitehead, Op-Ed News. Now, my concern is this. Having been a teacher for my entire adult life, still am. In fact, I'll be teaching a new course starting in 2 weeks at Fairleigh Dickinson. And I've taught for over 30 years. So as a teacher, in my case at the college level, but for others at the high school and grade school level, we're all concerned about the quality of the curriculum. It's being dumbed down. But why? What was wrong with the education that we, the baby boomers, and our parents received? It allowed us to be critical thinkers. It allowed us to understand how to think. Not today. I'll give you the reasons why today. And also, following on that, is the idea that shouldn't we be encouraged to live a life based upon truth and happiness? And yet, There are crimes against humanity that are all created by the global elite, and they're subverting our happiness and our truths. Colin Todhunter, Global Research, the latest insights on that. We have a lot to share. Let us begin. Always we begin with something positive, something we can grow from that helps everyone in the audience, and that's health. We know that we should be consuming more polyphenols. You get that from various beverages like green tea, but you can also get that from fruits like blueberries. Now, we learned yesterday that of the 400 different foods examined, blueberries were right at the top of the list of healing foods. Well, green tea has to be right up there also because it has the capacity to stop the production of cancer cells and repair those cells that have been damaged. Here's the latest on this, and again, I always cite the peer-reviewed literature to show you this is from good quality science. This is from an international conference on frontiers in cancer prevention. Here's what it says. Green tea polyphenols shown again to dramatically lower the risk of breast and prostate cancers. Quote from the forum, the scientific evidence in support of cancer-fighting benefits of consuming green tea and standardized extracts of green tea polyphenols is overwhelming. The ancient Chinese have known the healing properties of sipping green tea for several millennia. While Western nutrition science has been much slower to hail green tea as a powerful protective agent in preventing breast and prostate cancers, green tea cannot be patented, and the benefits of drinking several cups of fresh brewed green tea are very important. Here's the latest research. The lead author, Dr. Susanna Henning, commented, quote, our study showed that drinking 6 cups of green tea affected biomarkers in prostate tissue. This research offers new insights into the mechanisms by which green tea consumption may reduce the risk of prostate cancer by opposing processes such as inflammation, which are associated with prostate cancer growth, end quote. It also dramatically lowered breast cancer rates as well. So, in a separate research conducted at Columbia University Medical Center, scientists looked at women who were randomly assigned to receive 400, 600, and 800 milligrams of standardized green tea extract or a placebo twice daily for 6 months. They looked at the blood, the urine, and at 3 intervals, and what they found was this, a tenfold increase, that's 1,000%, in green tea metabolites compared to placebo, and they had significant reduction in a growth factor that is important in tumor cell growth and migration and invasion of those tumor cells. And that occurred at about the 2-month level. So now they're showing the following, and this is what the article says, quote, we found that tea consumption was associated with reduced risk of cancers of the breast and prostate in middle-aged and older women and men who consume green tea. And the highest benefit was at 800 milligrams. End quote. Now, let's put all this in lay language. What does this mean for you and I? What's the takeaway message? What's relatively simple? Most people will not consume 6 cups of tea in a day. Maybe 1 or 2. But you can get the same benefit if you take non-caffeinated, standardized capsules of green tea. You can generally get them in 200 milligrams. So if you took, let's say, 200 milligrams, 2 capsules, that's 400 milligrams in the morning, and throw them into your smoothie, and you took another 2 capsules, or 400 milligrams in the afternoon, that gives you 800 milligrams. Now, that would be what I would suggest for the average person. But if you have cancer, or if you're prematurely aged, then I would go up as high as 1,000 milligrams to 1,200 milligrams. It's all good. There's over 5,000 studies on the healing power of green tea. As you know, I'm a big advocate of fresh, organic fruits and vegetables. The more, the better. And or their concentrates or powders, if they've been processed properly to maintain the integrity. This is the latest study on why we should be consuming more of the whole fruit. It's a good study. Here's what it says, and this was published in the British Medical Journal and done at the Harvard School of Public Health. Quote, whole fruit consumption is shown to lower the risk of developing diabetes by 25%. The startling statistic shows that close to 30 million men, women, and children currently suffer the devastating effects of diabetes diagnosis, as the disease affects nearly 10% of the U.S. population. Even more sobering, health professionals say the pre-diabetics and undiagnosed cases mean this: one in five Americans suffer from diabetes. This is truly a silent killer, as many unsuspecting people will suffer the life-threatening effects of diabetic complications, including neuropathy, kidney failure, blindness, and dramatically increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease and sudden death from a heart attack. The research team from Harvard School of Public Health published the results of their work in the British Medical Journal that demonstrates how eating more whole fruits, particularly berries, grapes, and apples, was significantly associated with a lower risk of diabetes. The results stand in stark contrast to the popular belief that drinking fruit juices is healthy, as the study determined that these sugar-laden drinks increase the risk of diabetes. This is the first study to examine consumption of the individual whole fruits and disease risk. They analyzed 187,000 men and women who participated in this study. Quote, this is from Dr. Sun, the lead author. While fruits are recommended as a measure for diabetes prevention, previous studies have found mixed results for total fruit consumption. Our findings provide novel evidence suggesting that certain fruits may especially be beneficial for lowering risk of diabetes, end quote. And he was referring to apples and blueberries and other berries. Now, what does this tell us? The apple is powerful, but it's the skin and just under the apple skin that is the most nutritious. That's where you get your pectin. That forms a nice soft gel, so when it gets into your intestine, it can trap a lot of the particulate matter and bad bacteria and take them out of the system. It also has in the skin polyphenols that then are liberated, goes into the bloodstream, and actually helps repair our DNA, lowers our cholesterol, lowers our blood pressure, helps prevent cancer, and stabilizes our blood sugar. So truly, that old notion of an apple day keeps the doctor away is correct. Now, I have found that an onion, a raw onion a day, will keep a stroke away because it thins the blood. I've also found that raw garlic each day will kill bacteria and keep strep and staph and infections away, even the flu. So all this is important. Now, we should be eating ideally, not generally, not normally, but ideally, we should be eating at least 6 servings of fruit a day. Now, for some people, they would eat the wrong fruit and they would get too much sugar. For others, they simply wouldn't find it comfortable to have that much fruit, especially if they've not eaten the right combinations of food, they might get gas. So here's my suggestion. Always take 1 or 2 pieces of fruit, preferably berries. You can wash the berries and put blackberries, raspberries, currants. Let's say even the baby little kiwi, they're tiny, about the size of a marble. These are all good. Cherries, especially good, and grapes. These are the superstars. Wash them, throw some ice into a container with them, and throughout the day you can use that. It's called a grazing food. And if more Americans adapted the concept of grazing, they would do well. I only eat one meal a day. I have a liquid breakfast. I have my main meal in the early afternoon, and then I have grazing all day long. I'll eat an apple, or I'll have another juice. I juice a lot, and I spike my juices with different supplements. So I'm always full of energy, never full of food, so I don't feel that kind of heavy sensation, and all the nutrients I could possibly get into my system, I get in. So eat throughout the day small amounts of food, and therefore you won't be ravenous and overeat at one meal. And always select something healthy as your snack. And you just have to get in the habit of it. Like I cut up watermelon and I pour lemon juice over the watermelon, and it gives it a nice extra flavor. And then I put ice in there, and then throughout the day, you know, I'll have that. Simple things you can do. Or you take the concentrate of grapes, pomegranate, blueberry, papaya, mango, and you put a tablespoon of each of those into your smoothie in the morning. That's another way. Now, that gives you a 3-to-1 ratio, meaning a concentrate is 3 times more impactful, has 3 times more nutrients, because you've evaporated out a lot of the water, hence it's concentrated. And then, of course, the most powerful way to get your fruits would be to have the whole fruit, which is washed, dried without heat, made into a powder. You're only getting 40 calories, so it doesn't affect the blood sugar, but you're getting an enormous concentration, probably in the neighborhood of about 8-to-1, far more than any concentrate, because you've gotten rid of the water, at least 97%. So combinations of all that is what I would recommend. And then you're getting what you need to really slow down the aging process. And also, fatty acids could aid cancer prevention and treatment. This is from the University of London. It was done at the Queen Mary Institute in England. Here's what it says. The omega-3 fatty acids containing fish oil, such as salmon and trout, selectively inhibit growth and induce cell death in early and late stage oral and skin cancers. Well, this is very important, and this was done at Queen Mary University of London. The in vitro test showed omega-3 fatty acids induce cell death in malignant and premalignant cells at doses which did not affect normal cells, which, by the way, just suggests that they had the potential to be used in both the treatment and prevention of certain skin and oral cancers. Now, we know that the omega-3 are polyunsaturated fatty acids. We cannot make them. We have to get them from our diet. We can get them from fish, yes, but we can also get them from flaxseed. And the squamous cell is what they killed, and that's what generally occurs in our digestive tract, lungs, and other areas of the body. And oral squamous cell carcinomas are the 6th most common cancer worldwide, and it's difficult and expensive to treat. So every day when we do what we've been sharing, take our omega-3 fatty acids, we're helping prevent cancer. One final study here shows that exercise is the best medicine for Alzheimer's disease. This is in the University of Maryland School of Public Health, and it was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. And it says the following, quote, new research from the University of Maryland School of Public Health shows that exercise may improve cognitive function in those at risk of Alzheimer's by improving the efficacy of brain activity associated with memory. Good, because memory loss is one of the ways that we are impacted by Alzheimer's disease, and it's one of the greatest fears as people get older, because memory loss, you suddenly don't remember the things that were very important to you, including the people in your life. And most Americans over the age of 50 suffer from mild cognitive impairment. Most. You were talking about 50 million. And then we have all other forms of more substantial memory loss. And that takes you closer to dementia and then that into Alzheimer's. And it's a very quick trip from one to the other. So, exercise. And my suggestion is after the age of 40, every American should be exercising twice a day. 45 minutes in the morning, 45 minutes in the late afternoon, early evening. That would do a great deal of good for you. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Now to our public health issue, and this involves statins. This is from Gaia Health, from Heidi Stevenson, and I'll quote it. It says, "Statins are the greatest medical fraud of all time, study reports." And here's the study. "The risks from them are obvious before they were ever marketed. Nonetheless, they're among the best-selling drugs of all time. Finally, genuine science has been looking at the adverse effects and lack of benefit to document the truth that was obvious all along. The statin industry, with all of its spin-offs, is a $20 billion a year industry. We're observing the revealing of the utmost medical tragedy of all times. It is unprecedented that the healthcare industry has inadvertently induced life-threatening nutrient deficiencies in millions of otherwise healthy people. The only point in which I can disagree in this statement is that travesty of statins was somehow inadvertent. I don't believe it was. I believe they knew the results all along." The authors of the study, Sharif Sultan and Nim Hines, have produced a paper that is utterly condemnatory of the use of statins. Not only do they condemn the drugs, they also condemn the pseudoscience behind it. So what did the study actually say? Sultan and Hines reviewed a large number of studies using PubMed, EMBASE, and Cochrane Review Database to find them. They focused primarily on clinical reviews, meta-analysis, and large-scale randomized controlled trials. Now, here's what they found, and here's what my audience has to know. That the cholesterol levels, and by the way, cholesterol is a crucial nutrient necessary for energy, immunity, fat metabolism, leptin, thyroid hormone activity, liver-related synthesis, stress intolerance, adrenal function, sex hormones, synthesis, and brain function. Cholesterol is a good nutrient. Cholesterol is a primary requirement for the enormous array of absolutely critical functions of the body. So if you go reducing it too much below what the body needs, then you get trouble. Here's what can happen. When you lower your cholesterol, you can reduce your energy levels. There must be interference with fat metabolism. The thyroid must not be able to function properly. Our ability to deal with stress is stressed. The adrenal glands function must be damaged. Sexual function, reproductive health must suffer. Our brain must be damaged. All that when the functioning of cholesterol is too low. Now, they say that the statins are beneficial, and they've given us all the reasons why that will help us prevent heart attacks. This is challenged. Here are the adverse effects of statins that you've never heard of. And the authors found that for every 10,000 individuals in good health who take statins, 307 extra patients suffer from cataracts. 23 additional patients develop acute kidney failure. 74 patients have extra liver dysfunction. Statins increase muscle fatigue by 30% and cause 11% increase in very bad liver conditions. Also, quote, "What's more, it induces inflammatory myopathy, including necrotizing autoimmune myopathy with immunosuppression, and the statin-related myopathy can last for a year." They also point out that statins cause erectile dysfunction and that men suffer 1,000% more erectile dysfunction on low doses of statins because of their adverse effects. According to the FDA's adverse event reporting system, about 40 out of every 10,000 statin reports are for intestinal lung disease, which causes scarring in the lungs that is never reversible. Statins cause hyperglycemia after eating in both diabetics and non-diabetics, so it could kill you. Statins induce full-blown type 2 diabetes in women. Statins increase the risk of developing HbA1c in people with and without diabetes. And by the way, HbA1c is a condition that causes glucose to stick to hemoglobin, which is an indicator of greater harm from diabetics. Statins prescribed to the elderly cause 9% increase in diabetes. Statins can cause insulin resistance. There's a correlation between Parkinson's disease and low cholesterol with clear implications against statins, and a correlation between statins and early onset cataracts have been found. In fact, statins users may be 50% more likely to develop cataracts early. But there's even more shocking health risks of statin. Statin use is associated with an increased prevalence and extent of coronary plaque calcification. Ironically, for a drug that was marketed to lower the risk of cardiovascular disease, the CONFIRM registry identified a strong association of statin use to the progression of coronary artery plaque features. This isn't simply irony. Statins increase the harm that they are supposedly meant to decrease. In relation to this particular heart risk, the authors also said, quote, statin use was correlated with a greater incidence of severe coronary artery stenosis, as well as an increase in the number of coronary vessels developing obstructive coronary artery disease. Furthermore, statin use was linked to an increase in the prevalence and extent of mixed calcified plaque. 5 prospective studies have borne witness to the fact that statin therapy does not induce any coronary calcium regression, and evolution of coronary calcium continues regardless of statin treatment. That is, in lay language, statins increase the narrowing of coronary arteries, which can only increase the risk of a heart attack, and they increase the development of obstructive coronary artery disease. That means that calcium will increase, or may increase, calcium-related artery plaque formation. Statins also produce a significant increase in the risk of cancer and neurodegenerative dysfunction in the elderly, and the authors point out that more than this, but just how much more do you need to know? Statins are health destroyers. They're intentionally hiding the facts. The study points out that statins may increase the risk of non-melanoma skin cancers by 1.6 times. And the author then states, quote, for unknown reasons, since these publications, the squamous cell carcinoma has been excluded in all reports from subsequent statin trials. So, look at the fact that the media has not gone after the statins. Look at their advertisers. It's just shocking. But that's the way it is, unfortunately. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment, taking on the environment, some commentaries, and then I've allowed time for you to call in on our talkback segment to share your points of view. Our number is 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And if you want to watch today's show, anytime you want to see the Ustream, you just go to Ustream, U-S-T-R-E-A-M, the channel, and look for Gary Nall. And for those of you who listen to the message that we have a telephone number you can call in, we had more than 9,600 people from our WPFW station when it dropped its signal from 50,000 watts to 1,500 watts. Instead of being in completely in the dark and simply stop listening to the station, which 90% of the audience has done, it's virtually flatlined the audience. Instead, they called the phone number and listened to the program. 619-550-0869. Write it down and keep it with you. So if you ever turn it on and I'm not there, or there's some interference, you can always call telephone number and hear the show, download the program, 619-550-0869.
PRN is happy to announce that we now have 5,670,000 minutes listened to on Zeno Radio's phone listening service. Combined with tens of thousands of new listeners visiting our site each week, and hundreds of thousands of listens to our archives each month, we continue to break records for the fastest growing source in the world for progressive programming and information. Thank you for helping us move forward.
And for those of you who have not visited our website at progressiveradionetwork.com to read the hundreds of articles that you're not going to read anywhere else, please do so. About 40,000 people a night are downloading those articles. Also, we have some brand new programs coming at you. Roberta Addy, for 20 years heard on Armand DeMille's show, has her own show called From to Hell and Back, with Robert Addy. It's a really human interest show for those who have gone through problems from addictions of any kind and are looking for roads back. She'll be sharing that. We also have some phenomenal people, Freeform with Terrence McNally and Community of Voices, Vinnie Canessero, and Derek Jensen's show, the documentary out with Ken Adovisio, and anti-aging program on Getting Old in America, Educational Federation with Fordham Professor Mark Nason, Vegan Radio, Steve Prusak, and the Max Kaiser Show. Wow, he is phenomenal. That's just half the new lineup. We have 22 new shows, and you'll be hearing him here. Some very important issues concerning the environment. One is geoengineering. We've done multiple programs on why it's dangerous and should not be tolerated, all of the spraying. But Robert Waugh of Daily Mail has something else to share with us. Here's what he says, quote, "The sky could turn from a reassuring blue to a blank white if scientists are forced to take drastic actions to tackle global warming by injecting aerosols which scatter light into the atmosphere. We could reflect more sun away from Earth and cool the planet, but the knock-on effect would be the scattering of red particles around the atmosphere that wash out the blue. The result would be skies that turn from a foggy or hazy white instead of a crisp colors we're used to on a summer day. According to a report in the New Scientist, such a measure would cut a fifth of the amount of sunlight that makes its way to Earth, though the reduction in the amount of blue in the sky could be much more pronounced." Ben Kravitz of the Carnegie Institute for Science and Stanford University said that mankind could turn to geoengineering to solve problems of the environment, a drastic solution once things have taken a turn for the worse. He said the particles range from 0.1 to 0.9 micrometers in diameter and would need to be scattered in order to influence the amount of light in the sky. If only particles in the middle of this range were left, then the sky would look a lot whiter. It would work because the only reason the sky is blue in the first place is because air molecules are scattered. Such scattering is more pronounced among blue molecules as they have shorter wavelengths than longer ones. Okay, that's what they're saying. Here's what I'm saying. A, I'm opposed to this. Why? Because it refuses to acknowledge that when the problem happens, we are in the problem. The reason that Colorado had the worst fire and the worst rain in its history, why Indonesia has been flooding, why we had one of the worst typhoons just 5 days ago across the Philippines and across Japan and China, is because of global warming. We have to, at some point, as citizens, demand by boycott, boycotting politics, boycotting the media, boycotting buying things from them until they have a Marshall Plan to address global warming. We need to deindustrialize our farming. We need to have millions upon tens of millions of people only supporting locally grown foods, getting back to the earth, and supporting the homestead concept. Let every state set aside land for its citizens to return to producing foods. Have community greenhouses in the cities. Start to gut large sections that are beyond repair and turn those into sustainable environments. Everyone needs a place to stay, but they can find different types of shelter, including rehabilitating all government office buildings that are not in use. That's 10 million square feet. But we all need to eat, and a lot of people can't afford food, 18 million hungry children. So wouldn't it make sense that we could take green technology, hydroponics, aquaponics today, and in every city make the ghettos, at least that part of the ghetto that is not able to be fixed. If it can be fixed, it should be, using local talent, in effect, to rebuild. But we should put dozens, even hundreds of community gardens into every environment. When I was recently down in New Orleans, and you'll see this in a new documentary that is coming out, it hasn't come out yet, I walked around all these completely dilapidated buildings looking no different than they did the day Katrina hit. And then right in the middle of all this devastation, there was a block that had the house gone, and they had a community garden. The community garden was done with no money. They took plastic and hoops, and they built very crude but very effective greenhouses. It was about 40 degrees outside. It was a cold February day this year. But inside the greenhouses, it was about 85 degrees. And they had row upon row upon row of flats of microgreens and sprouts growing. And they had 12 of these greenhouses. Outside, they had a fish pond, and they had a giant compost heap. In fact, they were actually making and bagging and selling fertilizer. They would go around to all the restaurants every day in this old truck, and they would get all the scraps and bring it out here and throw it on this pile. The pile must have been 30 feet high, 100 feet long, and about 40 feet wide, and it was composting. And after 6 months, they would get these rich bags of organic fertilizer, and they would sell them and use them. And they had all the kids in the neighborhood learning how to do sustainable farming. And then on Saturday and Sunday, the local people would come, and I was there and filmed them. They must have had 200 people come and got their eggs and their greens, berries, because you can grow berries indoors 12 months a year. So from nothing and with no money and no hope, they created this little oasis. And then others were being inspired on other blocks to do the same thing. We could be doing that all over the United States, in every city. We just have to know that it's something we should do and could do. And I'm hopeful that it will happen. But instead, we're not paying attention. Instead, we're looking for scattering particulate matter. Now, what happens when that particulate matter comes out of the atmosphere? It's at almost a nano level. That means it's going to pollute the environment. It's going to pollute our air. Everything we eat, drink, and the soil and the water will have this in it. They haven't even thought about the downside of nanoscience, and it's contributing to disease. And they haven't thought about turning off the source of the heat, which are the Koch brother and all the other major Fortune 500 company manufacturing. They have not looked at the solution from a proper perspective. So we have to force them to. Politically, they'll never do it. This is from Joshua Frank. And I'll be there tomorrow. I'll be in Colorado tomorrow. And because I'm going to do some filming in the Rockies and at the Continental Divide. And I'm also talking with people in that area about why didn't they plan for a problem. I want to get their feedback. According to the National Interagency Fire Center, the number of wildfires every year in the United States has remained relatively steady. But here's the difference. Their size. It's just going off the chart. For example, in 1987, there were 2.4 million acres burned across the country. But just last year, there was 9.3 million acres. And it's more than just the size of Rhode Island and Maryland combined. It's also a trend that is increasing as more droughts plague western states and climate change continues to manifest. Here's what the Union for Concerned Scientists had to say. Quote, today western forests are experiencing longer wildfire seasons and more acres burned compared to several decades ago. The greatest increases occurred in mid-elevation northern rocky forests, which are having higher spring and summer temperatures and earlier snowmelt. These conditions are linked to climate change, end quote. Well, seven of the largest fires since 1960 have occurred over the last 12 years. As these fires get larger, more homes, particularly those built in fire zones, are being lost. For example, this year's Black Forest fire in Colorado consumed 500 homes. Last year's Waldo Canyon fire in Colorado consumed about 350 homes. Even the U.S. Forest Service is beginning to hone in on the real culprit behind the intensified flames. Quote from the U.S. Forest Service, we're seeing more acres burned and more burned in large fires. The changing climate is not only accelerating the intensity of these disturbances, but linking them more closely together. Why? What's simple? Rising summer temperatures are exacerbating drought and that increases pests like mountain pine beetles, which are ravaging western forests and killing trees that in turn fuel the wildfires. Drought conditions in Arizona have also been so bad over the past 20 years that trees like evergreens and oak and mahogany are drying up and becoming increasingly susceptible to fire. Quote, even a degree or so warmer, day in and day out, evaporates water faster, and that desiccates the system more, says University of Montana fire ecologist Stephen Running. And Professor Running knows his numbers. Over the past 10 years, temperatures have risen 1.6 degrees Fahrenheit across the continental United States. But you get out there in Arizona, it's increased 2.3 degrees. And it's probably going to go up to 4. So Arizona, in my opinion, it's gone. It's not able to be saved. New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, Oklahoma, Utah, Nevada, Southern California, Western and Southern Texas, nothing but problems you're going to be looking at. You're going to run out of water. You're going to have the massive fires. And you're going to destroy enormous amounts of homes. And there's no answer. But they're not being honest politically. Because look at Arizona. Arizona, no doubt, partially is to blame for its own warming climate. The state digs up almost 12 million tons of coal every year from the Black Mesa coal mine. And coal from Black Mesa, owned by Peabody, is sent to Nevada and incinerated in the Mojave Generating Station, which is partially owned by Southern California Edison. And Arizona also imports coal from New Mexico and Colorado and Utah, producing nearly 90 million metric tons of carbon dioxide annually from its 16 operating coal-fired plants. Well, as climate change increases fire activity, it also is contributing to the Forest Service's efforts to battle fires. So we've got one of two things we can do. We can either continue to live in denial that we are causing global warming, in which case things are just going to get worse, or we can become honest about this and turn it around and actually start to bring in solar and wind in the appropriate places, mainly up in the barren Rockies, and that can generate those two alone. And plus, you have hot springs, you have geothermal springs all over the West. In every state, you have geothermal springs. We're not touching this. Instead, coal. Well, coal's going to create more global warming. Global warming creates more adverse weather reactions. That burns down more people's homes, causes more flooding, more snow, more cold, more hot. And then you move into that environment, it makes no sense. So those are the states I would not move to. Visit? Yeah. Vacation? Sure. Live there? Not on your life. Because you're playing roulette if you do. And that's unfortunate. I believe we're all aware of the problems that occur when we ask younger people basic questions about history. Which president was responsible for saving our forests, expanding them, protecting animals and the trees and our streams and rivers from exploitation? And they look at you and say, I have no idea. What was Teddy Roosevelt? And he was up against the great coal barons and timber barons, and yet he won. Even when they sued him and took him to the Supreme Court, he won. He fought them. He had the courage to do so. Today, every corporate Democrat has sold us out. Clinton was the biggest sellout, but Obama's right beside him. Even Carter. Whoever pays the money, whoever seeks access and gets something in return, gets to take those resources. But today, our young people are unaware of this. The majority are. And you think, why don't they know about civics and history, geography, and just basic activism? But they don't. There are several methods, according to John Whitehead, of controlling a population. You can intimidate the citizenry into obedience through force, relying on military strength and weaponry such as SWAT raids that I've been mentioning recently about how even for the most simple infraction, a SWAT team is called. Militarize your police. and vast array of lethal and non-lethal weapons. You can manipulate them into marching in lockstep with your dictates through the use of propaganda. We have great propagandists, Bill O'Reilly, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin. And on the left, we have them. On some of these stations that my programs broadcast, we have corporate limousine liberal Democrats. Have you ever heard them really go after Clinton or Obama, where they said, do not vote for these people, vote for instead Ralph Nader? No, they condemned Ralph Nader. They condemned or would not support Jill Stein or Rocky Anderson or Gary Johnson. No, did you hear them condemning the vaccination? They support vaccination. Did you hear them condemning the pharmaceutical industrial complex when it wanted to drug the children and have teen screen? No, you did not. They supported it. So on some issues, they will expose the corporate left's perspective against the corporate right. But these are not humanists. These are not people with a truly progressive agenda. So they're part of the problem. And these were not the people who were challenging, for example, the privatization of schools. Instead, they were supporting, more often than not, charter schools. So easy if you've got a propaganda machine like a radio station or a television station, because carefully timed fear tactics about threats to their safety, and whether through the phantom menace of terrorist attacks or shooting sprees by solitary gunmen, you create a concept in the person's mind that the government is looking out for you. Or you can indoctrinate them into compliance from an early age through schools and discouraging them from thinking for themselves while rewarding them for regurgitating whatever the government, through its so-called educational standards, dictates they should be taught. Those who founded America believed that an educated citizenry knowledgeable about their rights was the surest means of preserving freedom. If so, then the inverse should also hold true. You've heard me talk about the laws of similars and opposites, that the surest way for a government to maintain its power and keep the citizenry in line is by rendering them ignorant of their rights and unable to think for themselves. Did I not just say yesterday that where the embedded journalists from Geraldo Rivera and all the others will show you the so-called brave American soldier fighting for freedom to liberate Iraq from its ignorance about its rights, but never show you the birth defects and the deformities of those young children? How many tens of thousands have died from depleted uranium? How many hundreds of thousands, 500,000 minimum, a half million minimally, from sanctions under Bill and Hillary Clinton? They'll never show you that. There was an interesting picture that really caused all of us to be re-galvanized on why we shouldn't be in Vietnam. That was a little girl running naked with her body on fire from napalm. And suddenly that one picture showed us the true nature of the war. And then our sons and daughters came back in body bags or substantially injured. And then it became real to us. Even that one colonel shooting that handcuffed Vietnamese in the head, that showed us the idea that these people were living without any moral laws and consequences in battle. When you see something firsthand, when you're present for it, when you cannot deny it, when you cannot shield your gaze from it, then it becomes real to you. But in America, we have been indoctrinated to believe that rather than looking at real problems, look at Kim Kardashian, look at the baby idiot and all the other programs that we have that are merely there as bread and circus. Don't ever look at the truth that a president lies pathologically, that everyone in power are sociopaths. Don't look at that. Don't look at the consequences, because that's a truth, as Jack Nicholson said, and a few good men, that you can't handle the truth. And the reality is the vast majority of Americans can't handle the truth on any level about anything. If we could handle the truth, then we wouldn't have 10 million children being diagnosed with ADD and ADHD and given Ritalin. We wouldn't have we wouldn't have almost 100 million Americans overweight or obese. We wouldn't have an epidemic of type 2 diabetes in our children. We wouldn't have 25% of all adult women taking tranquilizers. We wouldn't. We wouldn't have a despoiled environment. We wouldn't have Monsanto and 600 corporations making sure that they control the world through controlling the Trans-Pacific Partnership and in secret to us, as if that's important to the average person. The average union supported NAFTA and Clinton before and after. That's how sold out we have become. Those we've trusted have sold us out if it gave them an access, a moment to shine in some glory and power. We have been sold out by all of our major institutions, all of them, religious, political, cultural, all of them. And how in the hell did they do it? It was simple. Either propaganda or create a new generation of illiterates. And they've done both. When we view in this light the government's ongoing attempts to amass power at great cost to Americans in terms of free speech rights, privacy, due process, the debate over Common Core state standards, which would transform and nationalize school curriculums from kindergarten through 12th grade, becomes that much more critical. Essentially, these standards, which were developed through a partnership between big government and corporations, whose only interest is making money, in the absence of any real input from parents and educators with practical hands-on classroom experience, and are being rolled out in 45 states as I'm speaking right now, and the District of Columbia, will create a generation. Let me say this so you understand what I'm saying. Let's be very clear. The current generation will have no capacity for critical thought at all. If you think they're dumb today, which they are, if you think they're culturally illiterate, if you think they have no sense of history, no sense of the ascent of human consciousness, which they're clueless on, then the next generation will be nothing more than test takers capable of little else, molded and shaped by the federal government and its corporate allies into what it considers to be ideal citizens. Moreover, as Valerie Strauss reports from the Washington Post, the cost of the tests, which have multiple pieces throughout the years, plus the computer platforms needed to administer and score them, will be enormous and will come at the expense of more important things. The plunging scores will be used as an excuse to close more public schools and open more privatized charter and voucher schools, especially in poor communities of color. If, as proposed, the Common Core's college and career-ready performance level becomes the standard for high school graduation, then we will have more kids pushed out of school completely unprepared for college in the world they live in. With so much money to be made and so many questionable agendas at work, is it little wonder, then, that attempts are being made to squelch any kind of opposition to these standards? For example, at a recent public forum to discuss the implementation of these standards in Baltimore County Public Schools, one parent, 46-year-old Robert Small, found himself pulled out of the meeting, arrested, and charged with second-degree assault of a police officer, simply for daring to voice peacefully his discontent with the standards during a question-answer session with the superintendent. But I've also reported in other programs on fascism and we are now a police state, how any challenge to the government or corporate America puts you on a short list of people to be arrested, questioned, tasered, or anything else they choose to do with you. In a police state, which we now are, you have no rights at all. So, even calling this event a forum is disingenuous, given that attendees were not allowed to stand and ask questions. Instead, attendees were instructed to write their questions on a piece of paper, which the superintendent would then read and members of the panel would answer. In other words, there was no time or room for debate, just a one-sided discussion, and this is what life in our so-called Republic of the United States has been reduced to, a one-sided monologue by government officials who neither care about we the people have to say, nor are they inclined to hear us out. And that is unfortunate. And that's why The purpose of pre-university education in early America was not to prepare young people to be doctors or lawyers, but as Thomas Jefferson believed, to make citizens knowledgeable about their rights, interests, and duties as men and citizens. As Jefferson observed, "I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of a society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to make it for them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power." Yet that's where the problem arises for us today. Most citizens have little, if any, knowledge about their basic rights, largely due to the educational system that does a poor job of teaching the basic freedoms guaranteed in the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And many studies confirm this. That Americans are constitutionally illiterate is not a mere oversight on the part of the government educators, and things will only get worse under Common Core, which, as the Washington Post reports, is a not-so-subtle attempt to, quote, circumvent federal restrictions on the adaptation of a national curriculum. Well, that's the last thing I want, is the federal government telling me or anyone what we should study, what books we can read, what professors we can listen to, what discourse is allowed. That is an educational lobotomy. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi's in studio in New York City. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. And just to tag on to what you're talking about, as many of you know, I'm a registered nurse, and I work with a lot of nurses in the all over the country. And back when we protested in Albany against mandatory vaccination, where hospitals were threatening to fire any nurse or nursing assistant or any healthcare worker, for that matter, if they refuse the vaccine, we stood up to Albany. And because of that strong arm, they couldn't fire nurses who refused the vaccine. So just like the government, this is what the hospitals are doing now. They're saying, okay, you don't have to take the vaccine, and here's our new policy. And this is going all through the country. Right now, I know intimately about the laws in New York State and the policies that are being put out to the nurses now. Nurses now, if they refuse the vaccine, they have to wear a mask. They must wear a mask. Now, these nurses are working 12 hours, some of them in critical care in the emergency room. These nurses are educated about the dangers of vaccines now. Your DVDs have gone viral, and nurses are very concerned, and they don't want to get these vaccines. So they say, well, they make eggless vaccines now, and they took the mercury out. But they don't say anything about the formaldehyde. They don't say anything about the squalene, about the aluminum, and about all the other additives in it. So we're working with an attorney in New York State, Patricia Finn, and she is saying any nurse that is concerned about this, these demands, this absolute violation of your HIPAA privacy rights, I want you to email Barbara Duggan. That's D-U-G-G-A-N. She's a registered nurse here in New York. And she's going to work with you and Patricia Finn to see what we can do to have you not have to wear a mask because you're a healthy person. And her email is B like boy, D like dog, U-G-G-A-N-S. Oh, I'm sorry, B Duggan, no S, B-D-U-G-G-A-N, 572 at yahoo.com. That's B-D-U-G-G-A-N, 572 at yahoo.com. Email Barbara, and we're going to get a whole bunch of nurses together with this attorney, and we're going to fight this.
Good for you. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary, and hello, Luann, if you're still there.
Sure am.
Oh, great. Good to hear from you. Today, of course, it's Tuesday, and it is our regular open forum day. So listeners decide where the discussion goes.
Excellent. Well, we're looking forward to it. Utrice Lead coming at you right now.